Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in BC. It is Saturday, the Ides of July, Anno Domini 2017. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. I apologize in advance for whatever comes out of my mouth today. The public market opened the new winter shed this week, the glass shed, and we're in it. So we've spent the last 2 weeks every night until 11 o'clock at night, building, setting things up, getting ready to go. Yes, thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Try the veal. It was wonderful. And then, of course, market opened at about 5 this morning. So I'm not going to promise I have any idea what comes out of my mouth today.
You're here physically, not mentally.
Exactly. And if you did not attend the opening this week, well, you certainly will have every other week to go. All right, to the news. EULAs, or as they call them, EULAs, End User License Agreements. Nobody reads them ever. We're too keen to get to the app, get the Wi-Fi, that we're not, whatever it is, that we're not going to read the legalistic screed. We just hope it will never be relevant to us. Well, UK Wi-Fi provider Purple decided to experiment with people's wholesale acceptance of terms and conditions. It inserted a community service clause into all the legal mumbo and jumbo attached to its hotspot terms. It read, the user may be required, at Purple's discretion, to carry out 1,000 hours of community service. What sort of community service? Well, some of the possibilities were cleaning local parks of animal waste, providing hugs to stray dogs and cats, and manually relieving sewer blockages. Yes.
Manually.
Manually. Then there was cleaning portable lavatories at local festivals and events, painting snail shells to brighten up their existence, and scraping chewing gum off the streets. Actually, the snail painting actually sounds entertaining. I don't know about 1,000 hours of it, though. Still, Purple said that 22,000 people happily agreed to its terms and conditions and left themselves open to send their hands where those hands would prefer not to go. Our experiment shows it's all too easy to tick a box and consent to something unfair, Gavin Whedon, who's Purple CEO, said in a press release on Thursday. There is, of course, one important question here. How many people did notice the onerous community service clause and objected to Purple, or at least refused to sign up for its service? Just one person noticed. I would love to meet that person. Yeah. The purpose of this experiment was Purple crowing that it's already compliant with the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, which comes into force next year just after Brexit, so who cares if you're in compliance. Purple said that the new regulation's insistence on unambiguous consent before personal information can be used for marketing purposes should be immediately implemented. Oh, but will we ever bother to wade through the details? I expect we'll all waive our rights just so we can download a fascinating new toenail comparison app more quickly. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is do you read the entire EULA or EULA? And the choices are, of course, every time. Sometimes. I skimmed the first sentence once, like I care, and who the what now? So far, we've got 24 people. Only two of us lied and said, of course, every time. One person told the utter truth and said, like, I care. But I know you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right, under fascinating stuff, the first choice is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the very first poll discussion is 15 July 17. Do you read the entire EULA? And so far, four people have posted, and some of it is amusing. But I know you'll have more to say, so give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
There have been a couple of similar stories over the years. There was one, in fact, another one I just found. A British game company, GameStation, added a clause in their EULA that you agreed to sell your immortal soul. No one noticed it. It started out as an April Fool's prank, but they left it there and no one noticed it.
Yep.
And then I remember one Christmas, a company added, at the bottom of your order, a dollar to sell the soul of your firstborn child. And no one noticed and left. Now, they left the dollar on, so you could have unchecked it if you wanted to.
Right.
but left it on. And I also heard on the Security Now podcast, Father Robert was talking about going to DEF CON one year. And a company there gave a presentation where they made their EULA overtly broad and scary. You agree that you will let us watch everything you do on the internet. You agree that we can do this and this and this and this and this. And everyone still agreed. Thousands of people signed up for the service and still agreed to all of that.
Yep. Yep. People don't read the end user license agreements, and this is what they end up with.
Yep.
They agree to all kinds of things. And then they complain.
Yeah.
What do you mean Google is looking at my stuff? And what do you mean they're putting ads in the mail and blah, 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 blah? Well, you agreed to that.
What was that movie a few years ago about truth in advertising? Where the advertising, drink Metamucil, it will make you poop.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Good morning, guys. We have an iPhone 5C. And it looks like the battery exploded. The screen is half off. There's this big black sort of sack inside that's visible. The screen itself is all cracked.
That sure looks like it.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if this is a problem with the 5Cs and if Apple can do anything about it.
It's not specifically a problem with the iPhone. It's a problem with lithium-ion batteries.
Uh-huh.
And we have heard all sorts of problems with batteries over the years. When they get to the end of their life or there's a fault in manufacturing, they can start to swell. You often will notice that happening when the screen starts to bulge or the battery in your computer generally is below the trackpad, so it pushes up on the bottom of the trackpad, which stops working. They can be replaced. If the battery is still under warranty, if the phone is still under warranty, it can get replaced at no cost.
Okay. Do you know how long the warranty is on them?
1 year, and you can buy a one-year extension called AppleCare.
Okay, well, it's more than that. More than 1 year, certainly, and we didn't get the AppleCare.
Right.
I would suggest taking it to the Apple Store and showing them. You might be able to get a replacement outside the warranty anyway.
Uh-huh.
I know a lot of times they will. It's what they call they capture the device. So they'll take the device from you to test it to figure out why that happened, and so they can help prevent that from happening in the future.
Right. Okay. I'll give that a try.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, it's sort of the design of the way the lithium ion batteries work. There's a fluid electrolyte in the battery, and the way batteries work, when you use them, they wear out a little bit. That's why there's a recharge, a maximum recharge count on how many times you can recharge it.
Right.
And what happens is the crystals in the battery will grow on the anode or the cathode, and what they will eventually touch and form a short circuit. Over time. So that's why it's usually at the end of the battery's life when it's been recharged hundreds of times. And that will cause the liquid electrolyte to boil, which generates gas, which then explodes the battery out. There's a new type of battery coming that uses a solid electrolyte,
right,
which is impossible to swell, and it doesn't suffer from the puncture damage. You may have seen YouTube videos where someone pounds a nail into their battery and it explodes in a burst of flame. Well, don't pound a nail in your battery.
Yeah, right.
But this new the solid electrolyte battery, they show them with scissors cutting pieces of the battery off and the device keeps running. They have a knife and they're poking holes in it, and it keeps running. So that's going to be the next wave of batteries coming in a few years, the solid electrolyte lithium battery. And one of the side effects is that they can use the better liquid lithium metal batteries that have higher energy density, because now it's safer. Right now, the lithium ion batteries we're using are less effective than lithium metal, but they're safer.
Right.
So we can go back to the bottom line is we're going to get smaller batteries that last longer. There'll be no explosion hazard, and they'll be rechargeable a lot more times.
Which will finally, from my point of view, make it okay to have a non-changeable battery.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the nice things is I had a swelling battery on an old phone, but because it was changeable, it just popped the back off.
Yep.
Didn't ruin the phone. And so the back wouldn't go back on, and I realized, oh, the battery's swelling. I replaced the battery. I was good. But you can't do that on so many phones nowadays.
Yeah.
Because apparently it saves them a nickel. And so, yeah. But, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. I'm conflicted between asking two questions.
Sure.
So let me just give you this one. My default web browser is Google Chrome.
Right.
Every once in a while, when I bring up Internet Explorer, I get a pop-up box that says, would you like to make Chrome your default browser? Well, it already is, so I'm just wondering how I could make it stop asking me that.
What must be happening is when you launch Internet Explorer, it sets itself as the default browser. So now Chrome is no longer your default browser.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. The short answer is don't launch Internet Explorer.
What version of Windows are you running?
Windows 10.
So are you using Internet Explorer or Edge?
Well, I have four different web browsers running on the machine: Firefox, Edge, Chrome, and Internet Explorer.
Right. One of the things that you can do is go into Internet Explorer, and I don't remember where it is anymore, but it's somewhere in there. You can uncheck check to see if IE is your default browser.
Mm-hmm. And then it won't ask
that. I just did that before I called. The default browser is set to Chrome.
No. There's two separate things I'm talking about. One is the default browser for the system, and you should set that to Chrome if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. But in IE itself, there is a checkbox for check to see if Internet Explorer is your default browser.
Mm-hmm.
Unchecking that should stop that question from happening.
Okay, I'll do that. That's a good idea. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, and in the other three browsers that aren't Chrome.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do have one more question.
Sure.
Do you have time for it?
Go for it.
Okay. This question has to do with Google Home. It's a... I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I just brought it up on my computer, and I'm looking at the features of Google Home.
Mm-hmm.
And people, when I ask this question, people are going to think that I must be thinking in ancient terms or something, but I'm trying to find out why I'm wrong here. It says, call phone numbers in the U.S. or Canada, including businesses.
Yeah.
Well, I could do that on my grandmother's phone.
Yes.
No setup required, no extra apps to download.
Right.
Just ask Google Home to place a call.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't need any extra apps on my grandmother's phone either, and nothing to download there either.
But the difference is you don't have to pick up a phone to make the Google Home call. What the Google Home call lets you do is to just be sitting at your desk and say the keyword to set it up, which I won't say.
Yeah, call grandma.
And call grandma. And bang, it happens, and you're now talking to her on essentially a hands-free over-the-air phone.
And you don't have to pay for telephone service because it uses the Internet.
Right. So it doesn't cost you anymore. You still have to have a phone, but you don't. You can have the least expensive $15 a month landline phone and do it. What it's beautiful for is people who have difficulty using a phone, people who have severe physical handicaps or whatever. So it's beautiful for that. It's also great for those of us who spend all day typing. And suddenly we need to make a call to somebody, a tech support call or whatever. If I'm going to make a tech support call and I expect them to help me on the line, I now have to take out my phone. I have to get out my either Bluetooth or tethered earbuds And we have to take a break. If you want to stay on the line, that's great, but I'll finish this thought when we get back. Just back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we were talking about Google Home. Is Carl still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. So here's the deal. I should preface this by saying it is not, in fact, available right now. They are rolling it out soon. The ability to make those phone calls. And what that means is, for example, when I need to call tech support for somebody or for something, I have to get my phone out, I have to get my ears on a bud out, and I put them on, and I plug it in, and I make the call, and I set it aside so that I can do type. Right. And I get that. And I do my typing and et cetera. But if I can just say, Google, go ahead and call such and so, it makes my life so much easier. And a friend of mine was saying, I can't wait to do this because he bought one for his parents. And his mom, getting a little slow, doesn't get up from the chair easily, doesn't walk easily. He said, now I can just say, Google, call mom. She can then say, answer whatever the trigger words are going to be. And now she's talking to her son. No issues whatsoever in terms of that. And of course, you can, you know, the speaker's awfully loud, so that's also not a problem for her. But so the ability to do that is, for some people, a perplexing nicety, and for other people, a really useful thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the ability to do it for me, not really a big deal. Like Steve said, it's a first world problem for me. But for a lot of people I know, what a great boon it is to not have to get up, find your phone, because this is an 80-year-old woman. She doesn't hang onto her phone every second, which means she's up and trying to walk with her walker and blah, blah, blah. More chances to fall and hurt herself. Now she just has to say, go ahead, answer the phone. And she's on. So that makes her life that much easier. And I can't wait for Google to bring that out. They say it's soon. I don't know what soon means in this instance, but it should be pretty good.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks, Carl. Also mention that Alexa does the same thing to a point. You can leave messages for people. I don't think you make calls yet.
You can. You can do calls echo to echo.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Echo app on your phone to echo. So you can call your wife at home.
Right. But you can't use a regular phone to call pretty much anybody with a phone.
Right. So, which is Google had with Google Voice and Google Hangouts, they're putting that into Google Home now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's, like I said, I think for some people that's going to be a wonderful thing. And for other people, it's going to be a convenience. And for other people, it's going to be a nuisance. You know, but the big thing is, like with any phone, you don't have to answer it.
Yep. Did you see the commercial for the new Amazon Echo Silver?
No.
This Saturday Night Live parody commercial.
Oh, yeah.
She has
I did. Yeah. With what's his name? I can't think of the SNL guys. I can't think of any of their names.
It has an aha mode for those long, rambling stories. It's got to find your phone. Where's the phone? It's in your left hand. What? It's in your left hand. What? Yeah. It's in your left hand.
Right.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Bud from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bud. What's up?
Hey, Nick. I got a problem with malware bytes. I used the pro version. It updated this week, and since that new one installed, the flaming thing won't open. I get this little window that appears. It says unable to connect to the surface, to the service, and that's it. I've run the Tango. I don't think it's a virus. I've Googled it. I haven't found anything that's helped me to get rid of that and get the thing to open. Where do I go now?
Did you have the non-pro version installed previously?
I went straight for the pro one. I don't think I ever had the non-pro version installed.
Who is your internet service provider?
It's Spectrum now. Okay. Time Warner. So,
what's happening is a lot of people are having a problem. There's a backbone provider in New York State called Level 3, and they've been having some serious issues. And it may be that Malwarebytes anti-malware, so the acronym is MBAM. Malwarebytes may well be blocked. Not blocked, but unavailable, right? Unaccessible. And that may be...
It says the specific message is always cannot connect to the service.
Yep. Could be it's being blocked right now.
Right.
You can get to the other parts of the internet where you ever want to go, right?
Yeah, I can get everywhere else.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it's not at your end. I'm sure it's at their end. We're seeing...
Is this a desktop or a laptop?
This is a desktop. My main one.
So you can't take it to somebody else's internet and try.
Right.
No. And my other machine is an Ubuntu box.
Right. We're using Clam AV, of course.
Mm-hmm, of course.
There you go. And there are some things that people want to be able to do. Here's the problem. There are two meanings to the word service, and Malwarebytes uses the same message for both. One is the service at Malwarebytes. The other is a Windows service running on your machine. So you should also check that. If you go into a command line... click the start button and then type services.msc for Microsoft Service.
Services.ms, okay.
Yeah, whatever console. The C stands for. Console. And the services list will appear. The services window will appear. And I think you click on that. You'll see a list in which is services. Click on that. You'll see the services window. In the name, click on the name column so they're sorted in order. Scroll down to Malwarebytes, and then double click on that to view its properties. And you'll see a window titled Malwarebytes Service Properties Local Computer. Under the heading of startup type, make sure it says automatic. And under the heading of
automatic,
service,
okay.
Right, you want it to be say automatic. If it doesn't, there's a pull-down menu, and you can change that, set it to wherever you want. Under the heading of service status, make sure it says running. If it says stop, click the run button. Then try to launch Malwarebytes and see if it runs without any problems.
Give it a shot.
Well, and of course, to do that, you need to be the system administrator. So if you're not that normally, you need to log in as the system administrator. But those are the ways to run it. If that doesn't work, uninstall and reinstall is all I can tell you at that point. Because the update may have
try anyway, but I figured there might be something else to try first before I do something that drastic.
Right, so doing the upgrade may have, changed it from auto start or turned it off and then not turned it on again because of crappy programming, there was some sort of glitch in the setup. So if you just download a clean copy and run it again and see what happens.
All right, well, we'll give that a try too. And I guess the next thing I'll do is download the podcast so I have all this and don't have to take notes.
Right. Sorry. Right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Have fun, bud.
Hey, you too. Bye-bye.
So that's the thing. Some people have been having a problem with that. And again, it's so hard. It's so hard to test everything. Apple, Google, Microsoft, the Malwarebytes people, everybody finds that out. No two machines are at all the same. And this may have been a glitch in the update process as well, either a bad download or just a lousy update.
We have people ask us in our store, well, can I install that myself? If everything goes perfectly correct, yes. Yes, you can.
Yep, that's exactly right.
The chances of everything going perfectly correct are minuscule.
Right.
And you understanding every single question that it asks If you don't understand the question, don't skip it. That's ask somebody, because it might be one of those questions that say you're selling your soul to the company.
Right. Here's the real issue. If you have to ask, the answer is no.
Yep.
I'm sorry, but, you know, that's it. If you have to ask.
If you have to stop and think about it.
Right.
I always tell folks, nope. It's just like opening emails and everything else. If you've got to stop and think about it.
Can you change the oil in your car? Yes. Yes, you can. If you know how.
Right. That's exactly right.
That's about the only thing you can do on your car anymore, because everything else is a computer.
Well, that's true. No lie on that.
Can I install this software myself? Absolutely you can.
Go ahead and try.
Should you do that? I don't know. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Oh, well, I'm up. That's pretty good for today.
Yeah, me too.
A couple weeks ago, you were talking about backup, which is you can never have enough of.
Right.
And I wanted to recommend a program that I ran across a while ago called Free File Sync. It's pretty slick. There's a lot of different things. If you're doing a large backup to a local drive somewhere, as opposed to something like online backup, it works pretty well. I just thought I'd throw that in.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Yep. And then question I have, I've got some stuff that I've been selling on Craigslist, and I can jump from listing to listing and all over the place without any problems. I just did. And then all of a sudden, I get an error message comes up that says, secure connection failed. Connection to post.craigslist.org was interrupted while the page was loading. Where the page you are trying to view cannot be shown because the authenticity of the received data could not be verified.
Well, that's good. It means your system is working correctly and theirs is not.
Okay. I was wondering whether that's something that I can fix or it's one of their problem.
Nope, it's
or
their
anywhere,
problem.
Or anywhere along the way between you and them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's nothing you...
So the trick is, I mean, I can load 100 of their pages, and then on the 101st try, it fails.
Right, and that may also, at this point, have to do with that level 3 issue. Block of data did not get through, and every once in a while, that block of data will be the security data.
Okay.
Right, so, you might go back to that page in 5 minutes, and it's fine.
Yeah, because if I hit try again enough times, eventually it does come through again.
Yep, and that's we're seeing that problem all over the East Coast. If you go to the Level 3 website, you can see their map of downtimes and down places.
Yeah, I wonder if one of those previous calls was the same problem. I wasn't paying close attention.
Right. Sorry. It could be. No, that's it. What do you mean you weren't paying close? Hang up on him. this is the problem when there's that sort of issue on a backbone on the internet.
Yeah.
You end up with 80% of your answers are, and maybe it's level 3.
Gotcha.
You know, so who knows? Who knows? So let me just blanket say, and maybe it's level 3 for every answer we give today.
Today's theme for the show, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes it can be the other end is just particularly busy at that moment. You know, it can only handle 10,000 people at once, and you were 10,001.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of other things that I can do that are pointless, so there's no need to try and fix this because I can't.
Right. Do all the other stuff you've got.
Right. That I can't fix, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. There's a lot of issues right now, as you can see, and it's been like this for golly all week, pretty much. The level 3 outage map.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, the
shows that most of the East Coast, a little bit of the West Coast. And certainly a massive swath of New York State.
Well, DSLs have their issues right now because any of the folks and they won't let you do anything else. If you get one of the modems and they want you to do the firmware update, you go ahead and do it, and it messes up your modem, so you get totally locked out of the internet.
Right.
So they got you kind of in catch-22. You can't go out on the internet because it says you got to do this firmware update. You go ahead and do it. You follow the instructions. And then it says, oops, there's a problem with this firmware, sorry, you can't get on the internet.
Right.
So a lot of folks that might be experiencing that, too, out there right now.
Right. So New York, which is one of the major hubs, much of Level 3 traffic in Rochester goes to Buffalo and then down to New York. New York is hugely screwed up. Rochester has a little bit of screw up of its own, but the majority of it is in New York City. And so that's where a lot of our problem is right now. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1. I didn't think it was said enough. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray on Jazz 90.1.
At 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And where are we?
Jazz 90.1.
Well done.
I was confused.
I'm punch drunk because I'm so tired. I don't know what your excuses are. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
I've got a couple questions for Steve on my iPhone 6. Give you the first question. That's the easy one first. I want to get a hands-free headset so that I can have the iPhone in my vehicle and, you know, just use if I get a call, because I'm a technician who's on call, and I'm an old guy, so I've never gotten a Bluetooth headset before. Can I just go on Amazon and pick out any old Bluetooth headset or not?
Pretty much, yeah. There's sort of two different styles of headsets. There's the ones that will just be a Bluetooth headset, and it's a speaker and a microphone. And then there's the ones that add the iPhone functionality, so you can use the Siri assistant, you can control your music, you know, play next song, you know, play previous song, things like that. They generally cost a little more, but if you just want to be able to answer the phone, then any Bluetooth headset will work.
Well, and there's a third option, which is to get a Bluetooth setup for your car radio.
Right.
Right, and that's, you know, I bought one for, I think it was $30, and it plugs in, I have an aux port.
Right, you have to either have an aux port in your car. Some of them work with an FM transmitter. I haven't found those to work very well.
No, those are not good.
It's very hard to find an empty FM station.
Right, so the one I have plugs into the cigarette lighter. Remember cigarettes? It plugs into the cigarette lighter.
It's not the 12-volt accessory outlet.
Right, it's the power accessory outlet on the one end, and then the other end plugs into my aux port. So every time I put, you know, I use my buttons, you know, you have the AM and FM and aux button. So every time I hit the aux button, now my phone pairs to that Bluetooth thing, and anytime the phone rings, I hear it through the radio. And I can, there's a speaker in the Bluetooth thing, so I just speak and I hear it through the radio, and I can answer calls while I'm driving, and it's completely hands-free. But I don't have a headset on, which means I can hear sirens and other things earlier, right, than I would if I had the headsets on. And it's I think that makes it a little safer.
Yeah, I see that on the commercials for the newer cars. I don't have my vehicle, I should say, is not new enough for that. But
nor is mine. Stop talking. Let me finish. My car is old. That's why I had to add one that plugged into the aux port and the cigarette lighter. It's not built into the car radio. It's added on to the car radio.
Jeez, I don't think I have an aux port.
Well, if you don't have an aux port, that's a separate issue. But if you should check to see if you do, because then you can get away with it for like $30 and you're done.
Okay,
sorry, what's your other question?
I have the iPhone 6 I've had for several months. I was never able to get my text messages off my iPhone 4S. Is there any way I can do that, either get them onto my PC or somehow get them over to my iPhone 6 or not?
Well, invent a time machine. No. When you get your new phone, back up your old phone, back up everything to iCloud, and then when you get your new phone, restore everything from iCloud. And that's how everything gets transferred over. To transfer them after the fact, you need a third-party program. There are a bunch of them that will extract the text messages from your phone. I use one called iExplore, X-P-L-O-R-E, from Micromat, I think it is. Microplant. iExplorer. And that will basically suck all the information off your phone into your computer.
Okay. Will it take it from my old phone over to my PC, or does it have to be a Mac?
No, you can be any computer.
And
well, Mac or Windows. I haven't looked for a Linux version.
Right.
Is that how much does it cost?
Let's see. Most of them I've found are pretty cheap. This one is $40 for one computer.
Okay.
Which is all you need, actually.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, well, you've answered both my questions for me. Thank you.
There you go. Thanks. It's hard to move to a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to move to a new platform.
Right.
To go from iPhone to Android or Android to iPhone.
Yep.
And people, theoretically, the people at the phone company should help you do that.
Yeah, your iMessages go through iCloud, so that won't be a problem. Your SMS messages should go through the carrier.
Right.
On the iPhone, both of those are part of the backup that it does.
Right. Right. And I came to a problem today that I think I can solve here. Apparently I cannot.
Well, that's one thing, though. It's good about the Android phones that if you've set everything up with a Google account, it doesn't matter.
If you stay within your platform, it happens automatically if you use the backup and restore.
Yeah, you just go ahead, and I can get a brand new phone, and it doesn't know me from squat. I go ahead, sign in my Google account, bam.
Right.
It brings down all the messages, all my email accounts, photos, you name it. It's all the contacts and the pictures thereof are all brought over automatically, and I don't even have to think twice about it.
Yep.
Yep. One issue that I have been using Samsung's messaging system mm-hmm. for SMS.
Oh, yeah.
I switched to Google's just because I like it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's prettier and more interesting and blah, 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 blah. What?
And you can't make it stop asking you.
And now every time I turn on my phone, every time I get a message that says, do you want to make Samsung messaging your default messaging system? No. Or I would have done that because I'm smart. So stop asking.
Well, there's got to be something in there, one of the other settings, underlying settings within the system of the phone that's turned on to ask. Have it
oh, no, this is Samsung. They are going to force themselves on you as much as possible.
Yeah, I know, but like
you
say.
You get a Google Pure phone?
Not this one I didn't. Maybe the next one.
That's your problem there.
Maybe the next one.
Yeah, I mean, my phone, that's one thing I love about the Google phone, is it came with no bloatware. I mean, Facebook and all these other apps that automatically are on most of the phones, Google, you've got to put on what you want. It only came with, I believe, Google Maps, email account, and Google Chrome.
Yep. Yep.
And then the rest of the stuff I've had to add down, bring on down the clock and all that stuff. But it's clean, and they don't clutter it with anything.
Well, I'm looking at the next Google phone, the Pixel XL, I think
it is. Yeah, the XL, that's what I have.
No, whatever. Well, Google Pixel 2 XL is the next one. I'm looking at it. They ain't cheap, but that may be my next phone.
The camera, though, I mean, it's... Yep. Unbelievable.
The other thing I don't particularly care for about this phone is that it takes a moment at least for the camera to wake up, I guess.
Well, one thing I also like about the Google phone, the Chrome phone, is that I use Waze on a lot for my job.
Yep.
And it is unbelievable how fast and responsive it is as I'm driving along that, it's keeping me right on track and everything else. The response and all that is really good and fast. So I can't complain about this phone one bit. I really like it. Be interesting to see what, though, they do with the new the version 2, I heard that it's coming out, I think, later this fall.
That's the theory.
Yeah, the fall, it's supposed to have out a new, and I love it.
Saving my pennies for it.
You know, since the Note 7 went up in smoke.
So to speak.
Yeah, literally. They are doing...
Oh, man, a friend of mine sent me a Shaggy Dog story that ended with Samsung Note 7. And it was like a 40-page thing, and I just... It was wonderful, but it was very weird.
Well, they're still, though, trying to recover from the, you know, the bad, you know, rap that they got, and they're trying to promote the 8, and it's like, you know what?
Well, and they're reselling the 7s.
Yeah.
They're selling the 7s again with new batteries, refurbished, yada, yada, yada.
But not the Note, though, are they?
Yeah, yeah, and the Note 7, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, no. They are reselling them, and it's like Steve said, that, you know, you get, it's a smaller battery, mm-hmm. so it's less life, but it's theoretically a battery that isn't going to pinch and...
See, that's where, you know, and they wound up, they were so touting that it's 2 millimeters thinner. You know, if they hadn't have gone that 2 millimeters thinner, because when you're carrying around a phone, 2 millimeters thickness isn't really that big of a deal compared to the old flip phones that we used to carry.
Yep.
Nowadays, give me a break, Easty. You know, it's just not... No big deal.
Well, that's the new marketing. You got to say yours is thinner than the competitors.
Yeah, but,
well, and we blame Apple for that.
Yeah.
But then they wound up causing so many problems. You know, that was it 2 millimeters worth the millions that they're losing, not in the, you know, the phones being recalled and the lost security and faith that their customer base had in them.
Right.
A lot of folks are saying, yeah, no, your last one because of this and that. No. They're looking to go other platforms, and that's why I held out for the Google phone. Because they tried to get me to go to one of the edges. And I go, no. Well, you got it. You know, that phone could burn up. I go, well, you know what? If it feels warm getting in my pocket, I'll throw it down on the ground and let it burn.
Yep.
But I wound up turning it in for my Google phone, and it worked fine, even when I turned it in.
Yep.
They go, well, we got to push this.
Most of them did not have a problem. It was really a very small number.
Yeah.
The problem is one of them had that issue on a plane.
Yeah, and I think
so immediately it's a terrorist device of something. I don't know.
I believe when you come down to it, it was maybe a handful of incidences. But because of that one on the plane, that blew it totally off the mark, you know, off the map and everything else. You know, oh, we got to get a recall. It's unsafe. You could be on a plane and cause it to crash and everything else. And it wasn't going to happen anyways.
What nobody thinks about is the fact that every device we carry has a lithium ion battery in it nowadays.
Yeah.
Did you get on the phone with a tablet? Bang. Phone? Bang. Laptop? Bang.
Hearing aid?
Hearing aid.
Transistor radio?
Exactly.
Transistor radio?
What?
Walkman?
Yeah, Walkman.
Tape deck?
Walkman had AA batteries.
Yeah.
So, no.
No, but now you put the Energizer lithium AAs.
You still have a lithium ion battery.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You're toast.
Yeah.
Yep.
That could burn up too.
Yep. So that's the thing.
My airplane uses lithium polymer batteries.
Oh, very nice.
You have to treat them a little bit differently than lithium ions. You can't leave, so like your computer battery, you can leave plugged in all the time. And at least the better brands have a circuit in them that prevents them from overcharging.
Yeah.
Apparently, my airplane battery chargers don't have that.
Oh,
it beeps
wonderful.
At you when it's done, and you better get it off that charger quick.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad.
So you can't. That's like, so everyone goes home, they plug their phone in at night and leaves it overnight.
Yeah.
It probably charges in 2-3 hours. But it's
so
plugged
what?
In all night long.
Yeah, but so what? Because it, like you said,
they have
it gets off.
You know what I mean?
And that's right. And you have to be careful about buying too cheap a charger.
Right.
Because the really cheap charger. So if the OEM, you know, the company charger is $30, and you find one on Amazon for $6, don't buy it.
Right.
Because it doesn't have that safety circuitry in it.
That's exactly right. Speaking of which, as you may know, I pledged a 3D printer.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And the other day I found one of the things you can 3D print are model rockets.
Nice.
And A, B, or maybe C motors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said they've lasted half a dozen flights so far, but they cost me 7 cents to print.
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple hours of time, but 7 cents a rocket.
There's a lot of smoothing you have to do. One of the guys in
well,
the
if
club
you print
I'm
it
in.
Slow with a it doesn't matter. But now we're getting into 3D printer geek territory. But no, you don't have to if you do it right.
Yep.
Take the time.
Yeah.
Like anything else, you can rush it or you can take the time.
Yep.
and the quality.
Yep.
With the 3D printers, that's what it is. It's you can do a fast mode, or you, if you're just trying to do a rough.
Right. If you're prototyping, or you're just testing, or you're playing, then fine.
Yeah, you want to get a rough idea, and that's what we used to do with the 3D printers that I worked with.
Yep.
That you could sit there, and they were doing it with sand, whereas you're doing it with various materials. Although they had materials with the sand one that you could treat them, and they became flexible. Because I know Nike did a lot of their prototypes of their, believe it or not, of the soles of their sneakers.
Yeah.
And they'd sit there and do up a prototype and make it rubberized so they'd see how it was going to look and everything else. Once they had it, they ship it on off to their manufacturer, say, okay, create a mold of this. Here's what we want. And they do it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there's a company whose name I do not remember, but I'll see if I can look it up. They're 3D printing sneakers.
Really?
Yeah. You send them Adidas is doing it. I think it's Adidas is doing it. But all, they're all looking to do it. Feats, United, Nude, Nike. And they're all looking to make 3D printed sneakers. You send them pictures of your feet, and they make sneakers that fit you. Very cool. All right, that's it. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. I don't know what you were thinking, but for those of you who weren't thinking, you get the opportunity to do it again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported, thanks to you, Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere too far.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. And let me thank everybody who came to the market this morning. It was a lot of fun. I don't go to the market too often because, as today, it took me 40 minutes to get off the market grounds because of where I parked and blah, 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 blah. But it was a lot.
Did they do a new parking area for the...
Well, there's lots of parking off the market, and
like over on
Great
Union,
Frederica O'Connor, Connor is running a shuttle, a little trolley looking thing that takes you from the off-site parking lot, all the off-site parking lots, onto the market grounds, and it runs constantly. So it's a very cool deal, actually.
Oh,
yeah, it's a very cool deal. All right, as promised last month, Google has launched its new backup and sync from Google tool, which aims to help users more easily back up the files and photos on their computer. Now you will have no excuse. The utility is meant to replace the older Google Photos desktop app, as well as the Google Drive client applications for both Mac and PC. Essentially, it's combining the older app's functionality into one experience, so you don't have to use two different software programs for very similar purposes of getting files off your computer and into Google's cloud. The new tool offers a simple user interface where you'll first sign into your Google account, then select the folders you want Google to continually back up to Google Drive. Because it's replacing current users' existing Google Drive installations, the tool will respect any current settings you've already specified in the Mac and PC. Google explained that last month when it announced the tool was in the works. In addition to backing up files on your desktop computer, the new software can also be used to back up photos from USB-connected devices like cameras as well as SD cards. After the backup is complete, your files can be accessed in Google Drive from any device, including your computer, phone, or tablet. Your photos and videos, meanwhile, will be available in Google Photos. Both products' websites are currently hosting the updated software, which is a free download for consumers. Google says that business users, meaning those on G Suite, should not download this new software utility at this time. The company is planning to release a new enterprise-focused solution called Drive File Stream, which will roll out... will roll out to all G Suite basic business enterprise education and nonprofit domains later this year. G Suite users can apply to the early adopter program if they want to try Drive File Stream ahead of the public launch. From within the backup and sync software, you'll be able to configure a number of settings and preferences, including whether you want photos and videos uploaded to Google's cloud in their original quality, as pro photo photographers would likely choose, or just high quality, which at this point at least means they're free.
The storage 16
megapixels.
Megapixels.
The storage doesn't count against your quota. More advanced users may want to make other changes, like selecting how they want Drive to handle file deletions or changing the download or upload rates. Finally, you'll be able to upgrade your Google Drive storage subscription from the app. That's something you might need to do if you're taking this opportunity to offload a lot of your desktop clutter into the cloud. So does this sound like a useful backup solution to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
That'll be so cool, though, just to have one application that you can manage both.
Yep. I haven't looked at it yet because it doesn't work on Linux, which is, of course, what I use mainly. But if it lets you convert on the fly, that is to say, if I've saved a Word document...
Mm-hmm.
And it converts it to Google's format so it doesn't take up any extra storage.
That'd be cool.
That would be great. Then you know, I'll put, you know, I've already got my 20 million documents up there, 15,000 actually, documents up on Google Drive, and they take zero storage space.
What are they calling the new?
You just took the thing away from me, so I don't know.
It's called Backup and Sync.
Backup and Sync.
Yeah, which is an important distinction. The earlier caller that called about the free file sync program,
mm-hmm.
That's a sync program. It's not a backup program.
Right.
So a sync program makes both your source and destination the same. So it synchronizes all your files to another drive. If you delete a file on your main drive, it's deleted from the sync drive. If you change something on the main drive, it's changed on the sync drive. So it's not a backup. It's not a second copy. It's a synced copy. So if something gets lost or deleted accidentally, it's
hosed.
Deleted from the other side,
too. You're hosed.
So sync and backup are two separate things. They both have their usefulness. Of the two, I'd rather have a backup.
Right.
But you can have both, which makes it easy.
Right. And where this works is if something catastrophic happens to your machine.
Yep.
Then you have all of your data up there, and that's a backup.
Right.
But as Steve said, if, for example, you have an issue where you deleted a file that you wanted to keep, now you got a problem.
Or if you get hit with ransomware and all your files are encrypted, you go to your backup. Well, but if you're syncing, everything on the sync will also become encrypted.
Right. Now, under sync, though, can't you set... If I remember
it depends on the syncing program.
Right. But hopefully on this syncing program, it'll sit there, and when it goes to sync, it looks to see if the bit count or the date in that has changed up there on the cloud.
Right.
If it hasn't changed, then it leaves it alone.
Right. There's two options. It will only sync changed files, which almost all of them do, because that's what makes it fast. And some syncing programs, so right now Google Drive is a sync, but it has the option for history. So it keeps... the previous changed files for a little bit.
Right.
I think two or three versions.
Well, what I would love to see is a one-way sync.
Yeah. Well, that's a backup. You backup everything over to there.
Right.
And then you're doing incremental backup, puts everything over there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if it would be nice to be able to say, if I delete it from here, don't delete it from there. Well, that's what a version does.
Yeah.
Right? So you can always go back a version. But... what's beautiful about that is that it will make it much easier for many people who right now don't do anything to back up their systems. And it makes sense to me that they would be able to do that.
And like I've said for a long time, though, I mean, the critical thing for most folks, and I think everybody will agree, is photos.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not replaceable. Once they're gone, they're gone. Whereas a document or something like that, you can always recreate that. So, you know, and I've had over the 20 some odd years, 25 plus years that I've been doing it. You know, I've had more folks, well, the documents, you know, yeah, I can recreate. It's the photos.
Right.
You know, these old pictures of loved ones that have passed or, you know, not around and that. And they're, once they're gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're done.
You know, the hard drive crash or anything else. Yeah, we'd love to get it back for you, but you didn't take the time to find some way to protect them. That's one thing I love about Google Photos.
Right.
I mean, I've got so many up there. I mean, over a decade of photos are up there that, you know, from my grandkids way back.
I digitized an amazing amount of stuff, and I've got still more to do, and it bothers me that it's not done yet.
Yeah,
we just had a customer ended up having to spend over $2,000 to recover the photos of his deceased parent from his phone that crashed.
Yep.
It crashed hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And it's especially your phone. They're, both Apple and Google and Microsoft, there's backup programs built in. It's like you have to go out of your way to not back up.
Yeah.
That's true.
And a lot of them, they'll just set it to do it right in the background, you know, but you just got to do it one time. Or if you folks say, well, I don't know about that stuff. Well, then tell you what, anybody that's going out there to get a new phone, when you go to set it up, make sure that that is automatically happening. Mm-hmm. The folks at anything, whether it's Apple or Android phones, you know, I don't care, any maker will sit there and take the time if you ask them. But again, you're not being stupid, which I have said for years. The only dumb question is the one that you don't ask.
That's right.
And if you don't ask them to make sure that, you know, oh, are all my photos and everything else being backed up? That it takes them a couple clicks. Boom. Yeah. So then that way, no matter what happens, you're covered.
And the problem is people don't even think about having a backup because they don't think anything's ever going to happen.
Right. And the other thing is somebody said to me, well, I don't have unlimited data. And so I don't want to take a picture and have it suddenly, you know, using up all my data to go up to the cloud. Mm-hmm. I said, well, you can set Google Photos, your photos on your phone, your camera, to only back up over Wi-Fi, which is what I do. So I took a bunch of pictures this morning at the public market, which are not up online. Mm-hmm. And when I get home, the minute my phone connects to my Wi-Fi, bang, they'll go up.
And that's typically when your backup runs, is when you're at home, you connect to Wi-Fi and power, because it doesn't want to drain your battery during the backup.
Right.
So when you're charging your phone at night, it backs up at night.
That's what I made the mistake last month. I almost blew out my data I had the phone set up, and I was taking a lot of pictures for the wife. You know, I mean, we were taking a lot of them. And I was... And, you know, they're
happily up they go.
They're up they go, yeah. And I thought, oh, shoot. Because when I looked at my data, it's like, holy crud, I burned through quite a bit of data. Yeah. And I go, remember, oh, yeah, I'm doing all those photos. And while I'm out there, they're going up instead of waiting until I get home where it'll go up for free.
And it's just a setting on your phone.
Yeah, and I changed it.
But most people don't think to do it.
Yeah.
And, so I did that. And so now... last night, I've been taking pictures all week. We own a coffee stand. My wife and I own a coffee stand at the public market. Well, I paid for it.
No.
She owns it.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that's how
she
that works.
Runs it.
Yeah.
You're just, the worker bee.
I'm the money. I'm the money and the worker bee. Market has been changing. They've built a whole new winter shed, or as they call it, the glass shed, the bee shed. So we built a whole new stand and a wall of coffee and moved everything over. And we've been doing that for the last 2 weeks. I've reached that stage of overtired where you're vibrating, you know, where you're so tired, you can't sleep. So fine. We did all that. And I've been taking pictures all week and uploading them to a shared,
very impressive.
Thank you. A shared album. And we've been very happy. It's a beautiful, everybody but Elaine thinks it's wonderful. She still only sees the flaws that aren't fixed yet.
Yeah. Well, because it's her pride and joy.
That's exactly right. No, she's exactly right. You want somebody with that level of dedication and detail.
Yep.
To do something like that. So,
well, that's what keeps it, you know, a great business that she's got.
That's right. And so that makes me so tired. And so I'm apologizing. I did it during the first hour. Some people only tune in during the second hour. I'm apologizing for whatever comes out of my mouth because I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Yep.
I'm going to sleep like a log. when I get home.
One of the podcasts I listen to, one of the frequent guests is a video editor. They do a lot of streaming videos for people they can't mention. And he said one time something happened and they were on the wrong cellular network instead of the Wi-Fi network, and he got a bill for, what did he say it was, 700 gigabytes of video upload, because they upload all the video, you know, right, to the server to get streamed, at $10 a gig or some ridiculous, because that's, you know, typical cell phones are about $10 a gig, and so that was a heck of a bill at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Well, and so my thought is, well, most cell plans will warn you when you get close. In fact, it's usually three texts in a row. You're getting close. You're almost done. You're out.
Yep.
Yeah.
But and those texts will come within 5 minutes of each other.
Right. In this case, they probably came on top of each other.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
A little problem with podcasts in Firefox.
Sure.
Started about 4 days ago. I go to a website regularly and listen to their, you know, live stream it there. I don't download it. And it just won't connect to the podcast. It shows a little churning symbol that keeps going. So I tried it in Internet Explorer, and I tried it in Chrome, and it works fine.
Oh.
What is it?
I have a NoScript Lite add-on, and I've okayed it in that.
Yeah.
And it was working in that for years.
Well, but here's the thing. If they've changed providers, that NoScript won't work anymore. You'll have to okay it again.
I did okay it again.
And there is an option. I think it's if hold down the shift key while you start Firefox, turns off all your add-ons and extensions, and then see if it works then.
Okay.
And if it does, then it is one of your add-ons or extensions, and you just have to turn them on and off one at a time until you find it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have that many extensions, so I'll have to try that.
Right.
The other question is, you mentioned Google... changing, you know, using their picture format, and you get free storage.
Right.
What happens if a picture is embedded in a document? In other words, I have many eBay auctions that I've saved which have JPEG images in there.
Well, that's a good question. Here's the thing. Google says that if you convert a document to their format, it doesn't count against your space. And they know that many documents have pictures in them. So I can only assume that the pictures also don't take up space.
Okay. If you convert it to the Google format.
If you convert it to the Google format. So, and that's, by the way, in Google Doc settings, that's one of the things that you can set, is that when things are uploaded, automatically convert them.
Oh, okay.
Because you can convert them back again, right? You can say download as a Microsoft Word document.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then otherwise they do take up space, but Google gives you 15 gigabytes for free. It's the most free space of any of the services.
Right, right.
So it's even 15 gigs free, it's going to take a long time to fill up.
Right.
Yeah. And say when it converts it back, it'll convert it back to a JPEG, or does it have some sort of extension for Google?
You mean if it's inside a document?
Yeah.
I don't know what the format is, but I have more than once moved a document with embedded pictures up to the storage and then back down as a doc X file, and it works fine.
It probably leaves the image in the same format. It doesn't need to convert the image format, just the document format.
Right. And, of course, 90% of those are much JPEG. Less than 16 gigabits.
Right, and they're pretty much JPEG anyway. Typically.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I think you'll be fine.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll
Absolutely.
Give it a try and see what happens here.
Let us know. Thanks.
Right on. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Google used to, I don't know if they still do, but used to have the, during the, what do they call it, the day of security or whatever they call it, they used to have a thing where if you answered the security questions and did the security business, they would give you an extra 2 gig. So I've got 19 gig out of my
security checkup bonus.
There you go. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 21 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member support of Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Gorgeous day, and I'm sure you did this for us. Thank you.
That was my doing entirely. These two guys had nothing to do with it. It was all me.
No, I was busy.
Always on your coattails, right, Nick? I know. Okay.
I'm hoping it's going to be good tomorrow because that's I'm going to the air show.
Yeah.
It's always today is the good day. And then
right. The day you're doing the thing. Yeah. I get it. I do.
Okay. I'm going to say probably stupid question, but I cannot figure out what's going on, so it must be stupid question. Microsoft Office 2013 Windows 10 environment. I've changed my document template. And the only change I made was I went in and I didn't want that space between the paragraphs.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's a simple thing, right in the paragraph stuff. I tried set as default, which is one of the options.
Right.
That didn't work. I've actually saved the document physically. You know, open it up, changed it, made my changes, and went into the correct folders and saved it. I open a new document using the new document or Control N or whatever you want to do, it doesn't have the change I made.
Right. Did you save it as a template?
Yes.
Or a normal file?
Yep, I saved it as both DOTM and DOTX. I saved it as both.
And you put it in your app.
And what
data
name did you give it?
Pardon?
What name did you give it?
Normal.
Huh?
If I physically make a shortcut to my desktop of the template, it works fine. I can just click the shortcut every time I get the document the way I want it. But if I use the open new or, whatever it is, I get it just goes back. Everything is fine. All the formatting is fine, except for that one option.
Right.
I wonder if deleting all of the templates and then saving a new one would work.
Tried it.
Okay. Wrong answer. No.
And it just won't. It just won't save that.
Can you use the My Templates version instead of the normal template version?
I haven't tried that. My Templates?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, so the normal template is what you get when you open just a normal file.
Right.
You can save your own custom templates, which lets you have 3 or 4 or 5 different templates in the My Templates folder.
Okay. How do I do that?
Same sort of thing. You create the file the way you want it to look. And then when you do a save as, you put it in the My Templates, and I'm finding where that folder is.
Okay.
Or custom template. I thought it was My Templates, yeah.
It is My Templates.
Yeah.
And you don't have to know where it is. You just say save as.
Save as a template. And it puts it there automatically.
Well, maybe. When the thing opens, you pull down the templates to go to My Templates.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can do that as well.
It's also an app data under Microsoft under Templates. But it should send you there automatically when you choose templates from the folder.
Right.
Okay, so anything in My Templates would have precedence over anything in Templates?
Well, when you open a blank document, just the one that says blank document, that uses the normal .temp.
Right.
In the open box, there's also a section that says My Templates. And then you can have, a template for, a newspaper, a template for, a letter,
I don't go to that page. I just basically.
Yeah. Well, but if you do, you would be able to save whatever template you want, and in fact, as many as you want, and bring it up from there. Which may be, it may well be, that when you installed this software, are you running as the administrator?
Yes.
Wrong answer.
That's my job to give the wrong answer.
And you're doing very well, I must say. You deserve a raise. You're not getting one, but you deserve one.
Double my pay, right?
Yeah, right. But that's the short suggestion. It may be that for some reason the normal .temp.m or .x template is locked, and if you go find it, which would be under users and blah 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 blah.
That's my shortcut.
Right. You may find that it's locked, And you can unlock it, and that would let you change it. But if you can make all these other changes and they work, but this one thing doesn't, that stumps me. Honestly, it stumps me. But I might suggest that, as Steve said, save it as a My template and then just bring it up from there every time. Whenever you start a new document, you can
I can do that. It's a pain in the butt.
It is a pain in the butt.
If I open it once from My templates, can I do a Control N off of that and have it work? I mean, that would... Then it wouldn't
probably
be
not
such a pain.
Control N is just... I would guess Control N is just new blank document from Microsoft's template.
Right. Yeah.
Not the one I already have open.
Right. Not the one you already have open. You certainly try it, but I'm not going to promise.
Okay. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
All right. Have fun. Good luck.
Thank you. I'm going to need it.
You are. Bye-bye.
I wonder if you're going to assign a key to other templates.
That's a very good question.
There's a search templates.
Yes. What's your name?
Right.
Yeah. Don't use Word enough to know all the ins and outs.
Who does anymore? But yeah, there's
80% of the features are used by 20% of the people.
Right.
So 80% of the people don't know 20% of the features.
Right. No, it's the other way around. 20% of the features are used by 80% of the people.
Yeah.
Right.
Strike that. Reverse. Yeah. What I said.
Strike that. Reverse it. Right. Exactly. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. Hiya, Jerry. What's up?
Hi. Thanks for the call here. I have a question. I want to change my old router, which is a Linksys, to a new NETGEAR. The Linksys is quite a bit older, and I see some of the other programs or devices I'm running on it, like an iPhone, iPad, and I also have a security camera for my house running really slow. I can't connect. Is there much of a job to do that? Do I have to just get around the old Linksys system somehow and just put the new NETGEAR in?
It depends on how secure you have made your Linksys system. Certainly with the new router, at the very least, you want to set the same SSID or name for the router and the same password.
And then all your other devices should find it without you needing to go around to every single one of them.
Right.
Yeah, that was a question I had, if I have to change the password, but I can use the old one then, apparently.
Well, you can, if you're setting up a new device, you turn off the old one before you turn on the new one, of course.
Right.
And then you set it with the same name and then also the same password.
Now, sometimes if you're upgrading to a new device from the same company, it will copy all the settings from the old device. I know Apple has that. I think Linksys has that.
Right, but he's going
if you're
Linksys
switching
to
brands, yeah, you set everything up as new.
Yeah, and once you've done that, everything should work. And then it depends on what else you've done. If you've limited systems to specific MAC addresses, then you're going to have to put those MAC addresses in the new machine, et cetera, et cetera. But if all you ever did was set up a single sign-on thing, then that's all you have to do for the new one. Make sure you have the same name, SSID it's called, on the network, and the same password, and all your machines should find it and boot up just fine.
Okay. For some reason, I don't have the name. Do I have to go back to the whole system again and redo everything?
It has some name. It's probably Linksys.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Well, in that case, you may want to change it. Yeah.
If you call your NETGEAR router Linksys, anybody trying to break in is going to break in with the wrong set of tools.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
I like it.
That was a joke going around for years, is that Linksys was the number one internet provider in the country because so many people had Linksys routers with no password named Linksys.
Right. Randall Monroe, who does the XKCD webcomic, said we should have a national holiday for all those gentle and kind souls who give us free Wi-Fi named NETGEAR.
There was a South Park episode where the town's internet went down, and the town reverts to barbarism and Stone Age because the internet's down. And at the end of the episode, Stan, you know, one of the boys, goes to this giant Linksys router in the basement of Town Hall, unplugs it, and plugs it back in. And the internet's back.
Yep. All right. Did that answer your question, Jerry?
Yes, one quick question, too. How do you feel about the Windows Security Essentials as a kind of like a virus protection or a...
I feel great about it because I don't use it.
Yeah. It's Microsoft is not in the business to do antivirus software.
Although with Security Essentials, it's from Microsoft. Theoretically, it can dig deeper into the system and find more things.
Yeah, but the thing that is, though, they don't update it soon enough.
They update it about monthly.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. It is not a bad product per se. But as Dave said, they do not update it regularly enough to make me a happy man. And... as with everything, we have to preface it by saying it's a game of leapfrog.
Yep.
The good guys squash all the stuff, and then the bad guys put out more stuff, and the good guys squash all the stuff, and the bad guys put out more stuff. So, you know, at no point is anybody's antivirus or anti-malware or any anti-anything going to be 100% effective. But that said, because Windows updates less frequently... they are more prone to being hacked.
I see. Well, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Yep. I'm not saying it's a bad product. I'm saying it's just not upgraded often enough to satisfy me.
Yeah, I mean, there's Avast. There's, out there, which is free.
AVG.
Clam AV. Yeah, I mean, there's so many out there that you could get just to keep you protected. And then, you know, like we've recommended Super Anti-Spyware, Malware, Bytes. Because even though, you know, it's not as heavy as back in the day, the virus programs, you still need one because they're still out there floating around trying to do different deviations of it. But the spyware and malware are just as important. And you've got to run those once in a while. You just say, oh, yeah,
that's
I meant
the big thing,
to.
That's the big thing with the free anti-malware programs is you have to run them.
Well, Super Anti-Spyware will do it in the background, though. That runs in the background. Matter of fact,
the free one now, not the pay one? Because usually that's the difference. The pay one runs automatically. The free one you run yourself.
Yeah. Well, but again, folks should be doing that just like doing backups. You know, don't complain because your machine's reinfected and you didn't take the time to do it. To run a scan, like I tell folks... Every other week, pick either Super Anti-Spyware or Malware Bytes if you're using a freebie. While you're going to dinner, click on it. Let it run. Usually by the time you come back, it's checked everything and you're all set. You could do that one night and the next night, you know, run one of the others or, you know, switch.
Yep.
But as long as you're doing it and you don't have to say, well, it takes so long and I'm just sitting there waiting. Well, then do it when you're not sitting at the computer.
You can let the computer do things on its own if you like.
Yeah. Or, like, I also tell folks, all right, it takes a long time. Well, then, you know what? Leave the computer on at night. Turn the monitor off after you start the program. Let it run all night.
Right.
And you come down in the morning, boom, it's already done. It'll sit there and say, all right, it found all these things. Select it. Let it remove them. You're done.
When our bedroom was downstairs next to the computer room, when my wife would get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom, she had to check her email. Now that the bedroom's upstairs and the computer's downstairs, we don't do that anymore.
Very nice. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The other thing people missed... last night, it was Bands on the Bricks at the Public Market. They had bands playing all night long.
Oh.
Which meant there were people wandering into our half-finished booth asking for cups of coffee. And I kept saying, and people were angry. Well, they were drunk. And they were angry, and I kept saying, we have no electricity yet. We can't give you coffee. We can't boil water. I could give you a bean to chew.
Yeah.
That's about all I can do today. All right.
So you're not going to serve us? That's horrible customer service. I'm going to give you a bad review.
Several people said that. I suspect we do have bad reviews somewhere online. However, we're at the public market. Most of our people don't care. They know what it's like. It was really interesting to see people look at the Wallo coffee. We had, and it's not even full yet, but a lot of people looked at it and said, well, there's got to be something here I'll like.
Yeah. you have a list of coffees now?
We have a wall of
coffee.
The actual coffee things are there. You pull one down, give it to Maddie, probably is at the grinder, and she'll grind it for you.
Cool. Now, and can you take a picture of that list and put it on the website?
It's there. It's on the web. It's already there. It's on Facebook right now. And now that I have that, I can do this.
Yep.
That will change now comparatively quickly. We're talking about flowercitycoffee.com, and right now it hasn't changed in about 15 years, but Elaine doesn't care about it. She's
because it was a picture 15 years ago. She probably likes that
picture. She does like that picture a lot, yeah. All right, Moscow-based security companies Kaspersky Lab, has denied working with Russian intelligence agencies following U.S. media and government suspicion. Bloomberg said it has seen emails showing Kaspersky had developed tools for Russia's intelligence agency, and on Tuesday, the U.S. government's General Services Administration removed Kaspersky Lab from a list of approved vendors. But the company has now insisted it has no ties to any government. Kaspersky Lab is known for its antivirus software and provides cybersecurity products to businesses. Bloomberg reported it had seen emails between Chief Executive Eugene Kaspersky and senior Kaspersky staff outlining a secret cybersecurity project apparently requested by the Russian intelligence service FSB, which is a Russian intelligence service and not the front side bus. In the emails, Mr. Kaspersky described tools to protect against attacks and also engage active countermeasures. Bloomberg suggested that the tools not only deflected cyber attacks, but also captured information about the hackers launching them to pass on to Russian intelligence services. In the emails, Mr. Kaspersky said that the software could one day be sold to corporate customers worldwide. Refuting the claims, Kaspersky Lab said the communication was misinterpreted or manipulated to try to make the media's outlet's narrative work. Kaspersky Lab is very public about the fact that it assists law enforcement agencies around the world with fighting cyber threats, including those in Russia, by providing cybersecurity expertise on malware and cyber attacks. However, the U.S. General Services Administration has said it had removed Kaspersky Labs from its list of government-approved suppliers after review and careful consideration. In a further statement, Kaspersky Labs said the company has never helped nor will help any government in the world with the cyber espionage efforts. Kaspersky Lab believes it is completely unacceptable that the company is being unjustly accused without any hard evidence to back up these false accusations. In the statement, Mr. Kaspersky offered to meet U.S. government officials and provide his company software code for audit. Kaspersky Lab, a private company, seems to be caught in the middle of a geopolitical fight where each side is attempting to use the company as a pawn in their political game, the company said. So, do you use Kaspersky? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
They've always sort of gotten a bad reputation, not bad rap, because they're Russian.
Right.
Which isn't necessarily bad.
I get it.
In fact, I remember allegations that they were making the viruses they were finding.
Right, right, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Al from Greece, New York. Hi, Al, what's up?
Hi, gentlemen. How are you? You're very busy today.
It's a busy day. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm trying to load a digital coupon printer.
Okay.
I've been playing with this for a while. But every time I go through the whole process, installing the installer and everything else that came up, and when I'm loading the installation, I keep getting an error. It says, error getting file security program file X86 digital coupon printer, digital coupon printer X. Get AST error 5.
Which software are you installing? Is that
It's from Hapster. I've had it on there before, but then when I ran the super anti-spyware,
that's the problem.
And I inadvertently clicked and I got rid of it. This was a while ago.
Most of the coupon printers or digital coupons or get coupons are actually spyware.
Okay.
And so people think they're getting coupons. Yeah, you may be getting coupons, but you're also losing a lot of privacy. They're right. tracking every website you've gone to. So they can give you coupons for those sites, but they're tracking every website you go to and other things.
Okay.
And so we see a lot of times the anti-malware programs will flag them and remove them because a lot of people do consider it spyware.
Right. I understand that part. Okay. So you think that this might be a spyware, and that's why...
Well, we know that the anti-spyware program thinks it's spyware.
Right.
Okay. And so whether you do or not is up to you, and that means you can go into the anti-spyware program you use and whitelist that program.
So what had happened is it may have partially removed it, which means you can't run it, you can't reinstall it because it doesn't know. So you may have to do a full uninstall with something like Revo or even the if it itself has an uninstaller. So you can uninstall it clean, then reinstall it.
Right.
I don't think so. But yeah, that's what I kind of figured. That's what it was. But I do another program too, and I was able to install it, and with no problems. But that GetAST error 5, is that a generic one, or is it just specific to a specific area?
Is it GetAST?
Yeah, get. Yeah, oh, G E T.
Yeah.
It looks like LAST, error 5.
Get last error 5, okay.
Oh, get last, oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a C++ error code.
Okay.
And there's really not much you're going to be able to do about that.
Okay. And now I get a second question. Just came up when I opened up my computer. When they reinstalled the Windows 10 the update,
yeah.
Now when I start the computer, the airplane icon activates. Then I just click it and it goes away, and then I could get
I don't think I know what the airplane.
That's the airplane mode.
Oh, airplane mode. Okay. Yeah. You're talking about your phone now,
no,
or your tablet?
No, I'm on
the laptop. Okay.
I've got a Lenovo.
Oh, yeah. No, I get it. Okay.
Laptop.
I was just, I told you, I haven't had any sleep in five days.
I'm just not explaining it right. Okay. It happened last week a couple of times, and then sometime when I open it up, it's fine. But when I opened it up today, it just happened to show up there.
Right.
And I just click on it, and it goes away, and my normal internet comes on through the Wi-Fi.
Yep. No, I get that. The thing to do is to make sure it's turned off normally, right? So if you select the network icon in the taskbar,
yep.
then that pulls a window off in from the right, and down at the bottom you should see airplane mode.
Right.
And make sure that's normally off.
That's what I did. I've got it at the bottom. I get my Wi-Fi, it says airplane mode and mobile hotspot, whatever that is. But, yeah, if I click on those icons, it goes on and it goes off. But then when it's off and I go, shut my computer off and it comes on again, the airplane mode comes up again by itself.
Oh, so, yeah, all right, okay.
I mean, it just came up now. I just thought maybe...
Right. You may need to go into the start, open the start button and select Device Manager.
Okay.
Go into the Network Adapter, then Properties of the Network Adapter, and uncheck Allow the Computer to Turn Off This Device to Save Power. Because the way it turns off the device is to set airplane mode.
Okay.
So it saves power by turning off your radios in airplane
right.
mode. So no Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth, which saves power. Right. On a desktop, you really don't care because it's not as like a laptop with a battery that will drain.
Mm-hmm. Right. And frankly, the amount of draw for those devices is minuscule.
Although on your phone, it can be a lot.
And your phone, yeah. right.
But on your desktop,
you don't even notice it.
You want your phone battery to last 3 days? Turn off the radio.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Okie doke.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. You too. There are a lot of tricks you can do to extend the battery life of your phone, but you don't need really any of them on your desktop computer. Right, because those are essentially
plugged into the wall.
Right, it's essentially a minuscule draw. Microwatts an hour. So it's not going to be anything important. All right, that music tells us you've wasted 2 solid hours of your life listening to this nonsense. I don't know what's wrong with you, but I know it's not going to be cured by next week. So we will be back next week with a whole lot more of Dave Enright. Well, maybe not a lot more of Dave Enright. We've had as much as we can take. Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here in the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Thanks.